Om Jnanatimrandasya Jnananjanasalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathang Vithang Thang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Paran Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vithangscha Nama Shrestha Manamapi Satchiputra Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasya Graja Madhupurim Matrim Gostavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasam Prapto jasya pratita kripaya sri gurun tanmatosmi Ananda lila maya vigrahaya Himava divya chavisundaraya Tasmai maha prema rasa pradaya Chaitanya chandraya namo namaste. Some questions? Mm-hmm.
We have a question from Gupta Govardhan. What did Srila Param Guru Maharaja mean by universal mind?
As I recall, first of all, he's speaking in a light way, and you have the quote, I believe it was with regard to Hegel. So, I remember about something about a coin in a pocket. I would like if someone asks something like this, if they give the quote. Who asked this? Uh-huh. So they should say, here's the quote from Guru Maharaj. But just, so he meant, how shall we say, from a Vaishnava point of view, as we're speaking about divinity, first of all, like, remember one place Prabhupada saying how the world was, when we say this is a dream-like existence, and one place in his books where he talks about, like, it's a dream of Mahavishnu, in a sense. Not that his dreams are like our dreams, his dreams are substantial. But then we have the Paramatma. So, like, there's this old saw about if a tree crashes, you know, falls down, crashes in a forest, and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? And this answer is probably a little more complicated than it seems. Like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, based on the observer. Right. In Gita, upadrishtanumantacha bharta bhokta maheshara paramatmeti chapyakto dehesmen purushapara. Paramatma is described as the upadrashta, like drashta, darsha, drishti, all these things mean seeing. Here, overseer or observer. Two birds sitting on a tree. Tree being the tree of karma, eating the fruits of the tree of karma. One bird observing while the other bird is eating. The observational bird, said to be paramatma. And my contention is that besides all of the like Vedic philosophy and Gaudiya Vaishnavism and all these things, on a very practical level, I think everyone knows that they're having an internal conversation with someone. This is just my own opinion. My experience, my whole life. There's an inner dialogue going on, and you have a sense that it may not be very, it may be nebulous, right? Not so clearly defined, but you have a sense, an awareness of a presence. I remember as a child, at the end of the school year, which is around, like May would always become exciting for me, knowing that somewhere in June, school finished. So there was a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, besides waking up to the smell of flowers and birds and everything, like school is going to end, you know. And when it did, then you have, it seems like an infinite amount of time, 3 months till it starts again. You know, you can't believe your good fortune. And during that time, not having to go to school, I realized, now I can do whatever I want. And I remember this one particular time, wanting to go downtown, get a diary, and there's like the long route via the sidewalks and the high, and then there were shortcuts that we knew through the woods. That's what we call it, the woods. Right. You can look that up. Walking through the woods on a snowy evening, Robert Frost. So, going this shortcut, I stopped for a while. Remember, every day I was in a classroom with, and those, I believe, 39 other students. There are like a lot. And surrounded by everyone. And then, so I stopped for a while and realized, oh, now I'm totally alone. And no one can see me. And then I realized, I can feel, someone is seeing me. Even there's no people around, there are some birds and stuff like that, but I realized, no, there is someone who can see me, who can hear me, see me, knows what I'm thinking. And I think everybody knows this, that there's some sort of internal companion. There's a dialogue going on in our mind. Nobody is not speaking internally. Maybe K2, but even he seems to have a lot going on inside. Issues, conflicts, sudden realizations. Right, so that presence, and in one place Prabhupada said about Paramatma, all right, he said something like taking help in acts of conscience, that little suggestion that comes, not to do this or to do this, right? It's something finer than even intelligence, conscience. You can be very intelligent and not have a so-called conscience. Right? So this awareness, and that's why I'm choosing to deal with this and not like the universal mind in the sense of an element of mind, like, you know, that you could mine, right? Off-the-shelf mind, not like that. Like in terms of a universal, you know, Bhumir Apo Analo Vayu Kam Mano Bud Mano Budhirevacha. But when he says universal mind, it's more like a Paramatma sort of thing. So his point was, and if it wasn't Hegel, it was Berkeley, but about the coin and the pocket, and whether or not there's something actually there, and all these mind games that Western philosophers play, particularly. Like Schrodinger's cat, that kind of thing. Which I point out, it was curiosity that killed the cat. But, so he's saying, whether or not there's any coin there or not, and if there's no observer, and that's when Gorman said, it's in the universal pocket, the pocket of the universal mind. So, yes, in one sense, if there's no observer, there's no sound, right? It has to be observed, heard. But what Gromer's point is, and not talking about, well, we're going to put some microphones there and then all we're going to hide and then come back and like listen to the record or from it. It's not, you're back to the same case. An observer, a hearer. I remember Jama Dagni Prabhu, variously known as Indra Armstrong, and you know, he's a legitimate poet and humorist. And one of his poems said, you know, when I saw you see me see you, I knew seeing was something that both of us could do. That's pretty good. And true. When I saw you see me see you, I knew seeing was something that both of us could do. And then we understand there are other souls like ourselves. It's not all one. You're not the infinite. I'm not the infinite. A whole lot of finite doesn't make an infinite. No amount of finite can produce the infinite, no matter how great or how small. Right? Like a micro dose of finite will not give you the infinite. So, when he's talking about universal mind, the Paramatma sees, hears, observes everything. And what does it say again? Gita and Upanishad, they're almost identical. Sarvatak Shuti Ma Loke, Sarvam Avritti Tishtati. I forget the other two lines, but it's saying, he hears everything, he sees everything, his eyes are everywhere, he sees and hears everything. Sarvatak Shuti Ma Loke, Sarvatak Tishtati. I forget, but it's in the Gita. But there's also a very interesting connection to that in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, where this verse actually connects to like, so the Gita, when you're talking about hidden treasure, like Krishna. They take it to like its ultimate expression, Krishna and the gopis. Not just Paramatma again. Paramatma is not the target of the bhaktas. Sometimes we forget that. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajganam advayam. Says there's only one thing to be understood. And of course, that statement is misunderstood. I mean, really. Says it right here in the book, there's only, yeah. Yeah, and then what does the next line say? Brahmeti. Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, and that one thing to be understood has three phases, if you will. Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Brahma, the target of the jnanis. Right? Paramatma, the target of yogis. It's Bhagawan, the interest of the devotees. Paramatma does not have a girlfriend. Paramatma does not have a consort. You don't see Paramatma and Lakshmi Devi. I'm sure somebody, no, I saw a poster in it, you know. Paramatma, you see like that, right? So Bhagawan proper means Shakti Shaktiman, Lakshmi Narayan, right? Sita Ram, Rukmini Dwarkanath, Radhan Krishna. And it Govardhana Shrestha Gandharvika Giridhari Jatakrida Koila. And when you get to Vrindavan, it goes higher, Vrindavan to Govardhan to Radhakunda, Radhakunda, Tata, the banks, and the waters of Sri Radhakunda. Which Srila Guru Maharaj once said, Radharani in liquid form. The particular flow, quality of sacrifice. So he means to say that there's Atma and Paramatma. And Paramatma is the, as describing it, overseer, observer, neutral, right? Passive, non-assertive, unless you want to include in the form of subtle suggestion, right? But not interfering with the will of jiva, which is necessary for two reasons. If he was interfering in the will of jiva, then jiva would not possess free will. And the other part of that is therefore not responsible for the mess that we find ourselves in. We'll hear people who have a very primitive conception of divinity. Some terrible thing happens and they'll say, how can God allow this? Or how did he allow this terrible thing to happen? Because he gave you free will. You did that. Right? And then we say, well, what about natural disasters? That would be a little more complicated. But karmically speaking, understandable why you're in a particular location at a particular time with a particular group suffering collective karma. Like, and one thing comes to mind, like in Florida, Miami, like it's not that the Native Americans living the Indian were like foolish. They didn't understand, you know, like the possibility of Miami Beach. They knew what was going on there, therefore they didn't live there or build anything, residence there. So the man who came in with all the intelligence built this big city, and it rains for 5 minutes and the place floods and they have big trouble. And then they went to like, so these primitive foolish people, you know, wouldn't live there. No, they understood something about the earth. And incidentally, for thousands and thousands of years, these primitive people did not pollute the water, whatever it is they did, the consequence was not polluted water, polluted air, and ruined land. That they didn't do. But the man with all the intelligence came and polluted the water, polluted the air, ruined the land, etc. You can check the universal mind for the history of that. So, and often Guru Maharaj will connect this with the Bishop Berkeley, as you wish, and his philosophical point of view, which is most often condensed as the world is in the mind. Right? So it's very easy to mock this, right? And say, oh, I see all of this, it's just in my mind. That's not actually what he's saying. As Guru Maharaj says in the subjective evolution consciousness, what is being said is, this is a product of consciousness. It's not that this isn't here or doesn't exist, but it's a product of consciousness. And he puts forth a proposal. What is more tenable? That stone at a particular level of development or reconfiguration generates consciousness, or that consciousness can conceive stone? So he will say, for example, this table, it's black, it has density, it has dimension, length, breadth, height, right? Weight. So he will say, those are all subjective concepts. Tall, height, wide, etc. And he said, an object is a cluster of subjective concepts. That's Guru Maharaj's contention. That an object is a cluster of subjective concepts. And that's being held in the mind or in the consciousness by extension. So he's saying, so this world, yes, you can walk on it, you can build, you know, but it's all like what? An iceberg floating in an ocean of consciousness. Consciousness is the foundation, foundational substance. The scenario that we're presented by those who believe in, what is Marilyn Robinson called? Scientism. Yeah. I should preface this by saying there are competing narratives, there are competing stories. We hear, in other words, it's simple, we hear different things. Someone's saying everything's like this, and they're giving you a story or a narrative that goes with that, someone else taking it in another direction. And something resonates with you or it doesn't. A scientist or scientific oriented person, no, we've done experiments, you know. All right, the fact of the matter is, you believe what you've heard. You didn't do those experiments personally. You read something, you heard something, it clicked with you, you believe it. So it's actually hearing. You hear a compelling narrative of competing narratives, and one resonates with you. Right? And it's story that drives us, inside and outside. Story, because within story is possibility, right? Or prospect. Right? So the story presents the possibility of a particular prospect. And what does that mean? an easy way, Romeo and Juliet, and you go, oh, you hear that? Oh, I want to have that. I want to have this ideal romantic love. I hear in the story, oh, I wonder if you can have that in life. That's what I mean. You hear this story, it resonates with you. Or you don't need someone to come along and go, you know, there wasn't a guy actually, Romeo and Juliet, it wasn't. There was this Italian girl, she wasn't that good looking, but anyway, he put her in the story. It doesn't matter. When the poet describes the beauty of some girl, they go like, I got a photograph, she wasn't, you know, it doesn't matter. It's a concept that you have. It speaks to you and you go, oh, and it speaks to your ideal of beauty. That's why we like it. We don't know what these girls look like. It was before the camera. It doesn't mean the poem's any less valuable. One of Shakespeare's most famous sonnets, they think, may have been written to his son, whose name was Hamnet. You'd think Shakespeare could come up with a better name than Hamnet. Not Hamlet, Hamnet. really? I guess you had to be there But so this, you know, the, shall I compare thee to a summer's day, that sonnet. It's very beautiful. And then some people realize, it sounds at first like something written about the beauty of a woman, and then they say, no, it was to his son who died early. And he was saying at the end, and I forget the lines, forgive me, but he's saying, as long as you may have died, that's why they figure it was his son, you may have left this world, but as long as men can like live and breathe and read, and when they read this, you'll still be living. You'll get eternal life through what I've written here, basically. I'm paraphrasing. Right? So they're just competing narratives. Right? In the world where we have, you know, fake news, there's just competing narratives. You're actually unable to verify any of these things. Right? Or anything. No, we have a body of men, they do experiment. Yeah, so there's a group of people who read, and so in the spiritual side of things, there are the rishis, the munis, etc. They're spiritual research scientists, and they've explored the realm of consciousness and extracted certain, you know, valuable substances from there, and they're presenting to us. And either they resonate with you or they don't. But they could. They may. And that's the beginning of your good fortune, the day they do. But among the competing narratives, one is, it goes something like this. I say, there are a trillion, trillion stars in the manifest universe. The known universe, how trillion, trillion stars. And among them, and this is all based on, you know, as far as we know, there's this one planet. When I say stars, celestial body, planets, you know, you get the idea. You look at the sky, you know, that's a star, that's a planet. I know you might, or someone else. But most people just, you know, look at the stars. Let's keep it simple. Trillion, trillion stars in the known universe, manifest universe. And you say, as far as we know, there's this one planet, blue planet, the Earth. Out of that trillion, trillion stars, this one planet, blue planet, the Earth, and there is life and these conscious life forms of which human beings form what I call the conscious elite. Right? And in other words, the objective world, it's so vast. You know, for all intents and purposes, unlimited, we can say. Young woman took a picture of a black hole recently. You know. Actually, it was a selfie. Anyway, so there you go. Trillion, trillion stars, the one blue planet, the Earth, and there's these living beings and a conscious elite, the human beings. And so that means objective world, virtually unlimited. And then look, only in, out of the trillion, only one place where there's life forms and conscious living beings. So then that means consciousness is a very, when something's really rare, like gold or... there's a word for it. Precious. There you go. Precious commodity. I can't, and all the, not found anywhere else. But, you know, they say, oh, maybe there were some kind of life forms on Mars. Or, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, you know, conscious elite people who write books like Shakespeare and sonnets, that type. And then in that group, we see what a precious valuable commodity consciousness as. And then in that, among those, that conscious elite, you get lucky on a good day, they experience a few moments of pleasure, a drop of pleasure or happiness. Then we understand that in this world, happiness is even a more precious commodity. Right? So vast trillion start, and then there's the one place where there's this conscious beings, the conscious elite, get lucky on a good day, a drop of happiness. So happiness, or anandam, is the smallest, least substance imaginable, actually. And what's ironic is that this, not only the conscious elite, but all these conscious beings in varying degrees of consciousness, right? That's what evolution is. Skrimmer said, objective evolution parallels subjective evolution. It's the evolution of the soul evolving in terms of conscious development. So, and ironically, that not only the conscious elite, but all conscious beings, they're searching for this most precious commodity, anandam, or happiness. Right? In one sense, that doesn't make sense. We already said how small it is, why do we appear to be hardwired to search for that? And since we're speaking of my childhood in Southern Maryland, so we go picking blackberries. And the blackberry bushes are low, and you have to like get on the ground and crawl and like live in the park. If you go inside, you'll find the sweetest blackberries. That was my experience and my friends. And I remember crawling inside one time, going for the real sweet ones, you know, and when I come face to face with a turtle, you know, and this turtle's face is covered with blackberry juice. Like, it's all over him, you know. And he's going like this. Looks at me like he's surprised, I'm surprised. We're looking at each other. And for a moment, I realized, we're both searching for the same thing. He wants sweetness, I want sweetness, and we understand intuitively that sweetness will give us happiness. That we both know. Get the sweetness, you get the happiness. So, but that's a bleak scenario, that narrative, however compelling it is to the so-called modern scientific educated mind. Trillion stars, one planet with the conscious elite, lucky on a good day, a drop of happiness. And we're hardwired to seek happiness. Seems unfair. Right? When there's so little to be had. And as we speak, we're generating more and more of these beings who are like mad after that sweetness and that happiness. And they're unlikely to achieve it. Just doesn't seem fair in that bleak scenario that's haunting everyone who's on any level so-called educated. Right. You know, there's some one poet wrote this poem, like I think it was Wallace Stevens, about the snowman. And he talks about like when you're out in the snow and you're seeing things. And he has this line in the end, I looked at it and it says, and that person who's listening, you know, like when there's just snow, and Russian people should know this, right? When there's snow covering everything, has a certain type of beauty to it. Right? When I saw it, I went, oh, like Sveta Dweev, you know, in Siberia particularly. But in this poem, he's saying, and who was listening? He says, himself nothing, beholds the nothing that is there and the nothing that is not. Oh, the nothing that is not there. Who is the person who's listening? Himself nothing, beholds nothing that is not there, and the nothing that is there. And everyone's supposed to go like, wow, that's heavy. And then I looked at, I like him very much, and I thought, this is just wrong. No, himself who's listening is something. And when he sees this scene, what he beholds is the something that's there and the something that is not there. Not he who is nothing, is feeling nothing that's not there and the nothing that is there. No, it's something. He is something, and when he sees this something, he becomes aware that there's something greater than himself that's not apparently there, but is. That's the universal mind. That's Paramatma. Right? Not this neo-Buddhist nonsense. Nothing. Right? He who is nothing, real. It makes no sense at all. Then, as Gurumaharaj said, when you say about doubt, I doubt God exists, I doubt the soul exists. And he says, does the doubter exist? What will you say to that? Who's doubting? What is that that doubts? That can disbelieve or believe? Disbelief is the ultimate tragic failure of imagination, in my opinion. Disbelief. Like, who is it? He said, I forget who this quote is attributed to. He said, when people disbelieve in God, it's not that they don't believe that they believe in nothing. He said, they believe in anything. They disbelieve in, and then they'll believe anything. So, the ultimate failure of imagination, of the greatest so-called thinkers of their modern, that they can think of universal mind, they might be willing to go that far. Right? Or the universe as God, if you press some science, they might be willing to find that acceptable on some level. But the personality of Godhead, that's too much for them. Why? Innate envy. Icha dvesha samutvena dvandva mohena bharata. That's what it is. Bhayam dhatiya bhinibheshita chad ishad petasya viparyayo smriti. Turn away. Try to forget. Suppress. What did the poet Browning say in one line? And I'm not saying he's promoting that. It's just a line in a poem, a particular level of despair, I think. He said, I want to go away somewhere where I can't be, where not even God can be found. I want to be forgotten about, where not even God can find me. I think it was like a particular level of despair. But there is no such place, actually. Only if it's self-induced, as Gurumaharaj said about samadhi. They've cut themselves off from mercy or possibility. So-called samadhi. So the bleak scenario, trillion stars, conscious elite, small, tiny, tiny, and a drop of anandam's the smallest substance. Right? So sat, chit, anandam, a perverted reflection of Satchitanandam. And this world, what is it? Urdva, Sakat Mulam, Sakat Gita, the banyan tree, upside, perverted reflection of the actual. So if we take this and invert this in this case, then we understand, and this is the good news, the hopeful news, the eternal prospect, is that, as Gurumaharaj said, the whole objective world is like an iceberg floating in an ocean of consciousness. So ocean of consciousness, virtually unlimited, iceberg, the entire objective world, an iceberg floating in that. Like an object is a cluster of subjective concepts. So the whole objective world as, you know, the collective cluster of concepts objectified, floating in this ocean of consciousness. So here, reversal, the real tiny thing is this, the objective world, right, with all its so-called planets. You know, we think, wow, it's so big. But we hear, what is that? Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti koti svasesha vishudhari vibhuti binam tad brahma nishkalam ananta masesha bhutam govindam adipurusham tamahamajami. Mahavishnu, the dream of Mahavishnu, lying in yoga nidra. From his pores come universes, therefore Mahavishnu. Universes coming out of his pores. Like golden eggs, and then they expand to a billion by a billion, whatever metric you want to put in there. They're big. Right? And what, he's not even, he's yoga, like dreaming practice, and with his eyes half closed, and from his peripheral glance, not even directly. So in that yoga nidra, the peripheral glance towards Maya, the glance personified, everything about it is personal, the spiritual world. That's why Guru, everything is personal. And I'll mention about Yajavar Maharaj. His appearance day was recent. He would say, like, you mean this table is a person? And Guru Maharaj would say, yes. And Yajavar Maharaj would go, oh, that's too hard. Like, but then Guru Maharaj would explain how it is, and it just because it's floating in consciousness. Consciousness cannot be divorced of personality. Therefore, they're not fools or primitive people when they address the sun god, moon god, etc. This is again like just the disinformation, right? What's the Russians invented this word? Disinformatsiya.
Disinformatsiya.
Yeah, from Europeans about Vedic culture. They tried to, like, oh, they paint their heads and they wear beads. They tried to portray them as like some tribal peoples from Africa. Then the next question should have been, oh, let's compare the literature. Oh, well, they don't have any. Oh, not the same. Here's Veda, Purana. Oh, they don't have anything like that. All right, so then your caricature doesn't work. Fake news. So, anyway, what was I saying before that? Oh, before that. Oh, Mahavishnu. So, like even sometimes it's described that, you know, uni quadrat, a quarter. It's just to give you some reference point. It's not that the spiritual world is three quarters large, you know, than this part. Right? It's just a reference point. Just like when you write on the board infinity and then you put the little line because your brain can only handle up to a certain point. Right? Because what's more interesting, the sequence of when it should go like that. All right, finish that. So that world, this world, is the small, the objective is the small, then floating consciousness. And what's the most vast, all-comprehensive substance? Anandam. That's the good news. Krishna is Anandam. Like sometimes we say Krishnananda. Krishna Anandam. He's Ananda personified. That's who he is. That's what he is. That's what he's all about, is love, affection, ecstasy, happiness. And that's can accommodate everything. They think, no, Brahman is the all-accommodating. Yes, in the general, generic sense. But superior to Brahman, Paramatma, superior to Paramatma, Bhagavan. Right? all accommodating, the extremes of the infinite, right? Greater than the greatest, anor aniyan mahato mahayan. Because we're also told in the Upanishad, yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavati. Try to know that one thing upon knowing which everything becomes known. It doesn't appear to be very specific there. They're gradually taking you toward a particular conclusion. So, and what did the Bhagavatam say? One thing, Advaya again, the one thing to be known. But that one thing, and the Upanishads told you to search for that one thing, and it is one thing, but it's divided in these three, Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Right? And that Bhagavan, so all accommodating, anoryan, anayan, mahato, mahayan, greater than the greatest, all accommodating Brahma, smaller than the smallest, all permeating Paramatma. Then Guru Maharaj says, what should be the central conception of the infinite, the golden mean? Where all accommodating greater than the greatest meets smaller than the smallest. Where would we? The Krishnera Jateka Kela Sarvatam Naralila Naravapu Tahara Swarup Gopavesh Venukar Navakishor Natabar Naralila Hoyan Rup. The human-like pastimes of Krishna. Human-like. It's not that man imagined God in his image and likeness. Right? Well, it would be anthropomorphism. But Krishna's human-like pastimes are the template for human civilization. And actually, the Bible scores some points on this when it says, man is made in the image and likeness of God. The part they couldn't handle is, so is woman. Right? You know? What about woman? Oh, well, that's another story. No. There has to be male and female representation in the original, like yin-yang. Right? And they don't merge. You don't have like yin-yang and then it turns into gray. Right? It's always black and white. So that Krishna, central conception of the infinite. See, as one's all accommodating, the other one all permeating. What's the central one? All attractive. Everyone's being drawn to the center, like gravity. But what is the gravity? Beauty, charm, sweetness, love, and affection. Oh, what we're hardwired to seek. Right? Search for Sri Krishna, reality of the beautiful. Reality, the loving, reality, the sweet, reality, the kind. So, and how small is it? The objective world? So we thought, first of all, pores coming out of Mahavishnu. Universe is coming out of the pores of Mahavishnu. Loma Vilija. And before we get into a stereotype about what is large and small and those things, because Guru Maharaj, when you're dealing with the infinite, it's not like I get it. You have to repeatedly reconceive Navayovana constantly, consistently. So we think, so the whole objective world, and then like coming out of the pores of Mahavishnu, and then very small. But then what are we told? Chintamanis charanabhushanamanganam, Sringara pushpa taravas taravas suranam, Brindavanam brajadanam nanukana denu, Brindani cheti sukasindur ho vibhuti. Swarup Damodar, quoting the Krishna Karnamritam of Bilva Mangal Thakur, in response to the prodding of Srivas Thakur about the comparative opulence of Vaikuntha and Goloka. He's prodding him so that it will always end up in glorification of the Braja Gopis. Bande Nanda Braja Strinam Padarenum Abhikshnasa. The dust from their holy lotus feet. Yashod Harikatod Gitam Punati. Something, Punati. How it purifies all the worlds. The three worlds here and the three worlds there. So he says, so think that these universes come out of the pores of Mahavishnu. But here he's saying that the one Chintamani gem has more opulence than all the Vaikunthas and Dwarka combined. One Chintamani gem. So that means, and we're told that, so this world, what is sometimes probably said, like a cloud in the spiritual, it's so minuscule. So now we're talking, that Vaikuntha world that has innumerable Vaikuntha planets, right, of which are, you know, a billion by a billion. This world, the way it is, it fits in the pores of Mahavishnu, all these universes. But in that world, those innumerable Vaikuntha planets, if you combine that, and we're told, you know, it's the land of Aishwarya, infinite, unlimited opulence, combine it all, and it's one Chintamani gem in Goloka. We're told, and that realm is like a particle of soil in Goloka Vrindavan. Then Goloka Vrindavan must be very great. And what are we told? It's 16 kroshas. That means like 50 square kilometers. See, at this point, our brains should explode. You say, wait, there's all these billions of, you know, trillion stars, and they fit inside the pore. One universe fits in the pore, and then the whole Vaikuntha fits in the one Chintamani gem, and that realm is 50 square kilometers. Right? Yeah, see, it's contradicting what we think. We have to give up trying to measure with our mundane resource, like our mind and intellect. We're going to measure the infinite. So Blake has Urizen, you know, he's with a compass underwater trying to measure, you know. Looks like Michelangelo's, one of his people. You know, God with a, you know, beard. That's the sad thing as well. Really? It's like naming your kid Hamnet. That's God, like you could do all these beautiful, that's supposed to be the infinitely, inconceivably beautiful God is some old fat white guy on a ceiling with a long beard. And it's pathetic. And he is, you know, Michelangelo, you know, who's so great in many different ways. I mean, there's no contest between us. I can't even draw, you know, a circle. Which, by the way, they say is very hard to do. So some artists practice that. Drawing the circle, not easy. But enough said about that. But that idea, you see, it shows the who we're praising. And these men are, they're wonderful. I appreciate their art, don't get me wrong. But I'm saying, who we praise is like, people are just so genius beyond all of that. And then they come up with something like that. Because they're saying, why? Adyam Puranam Purusham. He's the oldest person. Listen to the rest of the line. Nava Yovanam Cha. But he's also eternally youthful. So, again, contradicts the stereotype. The oldest. Then he has the big, long beard. I mean, really? No, Nava Yovanam Cha. Eternally youthful. So, it's actually Mahaprabhu's example, so you know it's good, to Sanatana Goswami, when they're talking about the opulence, sweetness, comparative, Vaikuntha Goloka. He says, like sugarcane juice. The only place I've ever had it is India. They have it other places? Okay. So it's not something that people have to Google, right? So the sugarcane juice, if you have a vat, a huge vat of sugarcane juice, as they do, yeah, I mean, they have it in Hawaii, and, you know, I mean, people aren't going around drinking it, though. In Cambodia, there you go, but that's Southeast Asia. But I'm just saying, sugarcane people know, they have it in Cuba, Hawaii, but sugarcane juice in India, they have the guy with the wheel, and, you know, they put him in there and run it through, and you get the little cup, and they put a little ginger. So when you have a vat of sugarcane juice, and then you start cooking it down, you can turn it into molasses, right? And you go further, what would in India be gur, what would that be, like a taffy-like substance, gur, starts getting more solid. And you go further, ultimately you achieve like rock candy, a little rock of candy, and in that, in other words, the idea, this huge vat of sweetness has been condensed into this one small thing. That's the example he gives to say, you take all of Vaikuntha Dwar and all that opulence and you concentrate it, and it becomes not as much as one Chintamani gem in Goloka. But then, this is the real point of the verse. This is Sriptamidhar quoting Krishna Karnamritam. Remember, Mahaprabhu liked to listen to Krishna Karnamritam behind closed doors with Sriptamidhar Ramananda. And he says, and those Chintamani gems, of which one possesses more opulence, sweetness than the combined Vaikunthas and Vaikuntha world. Braja gopis, they string them, and they're wearing them as anklets on their holy lotus feet. So what is Goloka? What are the human-like pastimes of Krishna? What is Anandam? Anandam Brahmano Vidma. We're told that's what you need. That's the one thing to understand. It's not knowledge, but happiness. And that means heart, love. Science has nothing to say about love, really, or heart. They can't. That's not. They could only say it's certain types of chemical sensations that one experience, you know, endorphins, or, you know, and we've figured it out, and that kind of thing. Like the Bengali policeman, and he says, he's trying to show me, like, he's up on all the latest things, and he goes, anyway, ultimately, everything is quarks. It's all quarks. He's like writing his report. And I said, oh, is your wife a quark? He had to think about that one. I said, she will be very unhappy to hear that you think she is a quark. That he, you know, so they're betrayed when we see the affection they express toward their wife, their children, their dog. There's nothing but quarks. Little quarks running around. Quarky. Little quarky. Didn't Gurmer say that Newton had a dog named John who ate like some of his writings? And he came back and he's sitting there with John, and he said, there's no need to punish him, he said, because John, you don't know what you've done. So don't be like John. And so that's the position of Krishna Leela and the Krishna world. The good news that it's full of Anandam or happiness. He's the Lord of Anandam. Ishara Parama Krishna Sachid Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. And you think, they just said Krishna, right, in the first line. Ishara Parama Krishna. So do you need to know more than that? And then it says, Sachid Ananda Vigraha. And that Krishna, he's not a person of this world. He's not made of, mundane substance. And just like the top of all the mundane, substantial people, he's the best or the highest or the ultimate. No. Sachit Ananda, he has a vigraha form. That's Sachit Anandam. Okay. And then you think, all right. But then the next line, it's saying, and who is the original? Krishna, even. Not just the Anadi Adi of everything, but that if we're going to say everything, then that means of all the Krishnas too. Anadi Adir Govinda. This is again good news. They're saying the Swayam Bhagavan, the original, he's Govinda. As Prabhupada said, Go means Indriyas. Senses, right? That and Govinda, he gives pleasure to the senses. As Blake said, this is our evening for references to British poets and writers. If the doors of perception are cleansed, we will see everything as it is, infinite. I like this very much, but like to add to that, then if I hear you, William Blake, oh mystic poet, then it, my door, the doors of perceptions are the senses. See the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and tactile sense. So then that would mean, and they're cleansed, as Gurmer said, of what? Acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, stereotype. So when you hear a description of your brain can't handle it. Right? That's a good thing. Janantu eva janantu kim bahukta namepura. Brahma says, yes, take it from me, I have four heads. Right? And I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out the human-like pastimes of Christ. It bewildered me. Says on the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Muhyanti Yatsuraya, the gods will be bewildered. Brahma Vimohan, Indra Mohan. Right? Indra and the Govardhan. Shiva and Mohini Murti. So Brahma, Indra, Shiva. Right? All bewildered by trying to estimate the infant Krishna. Human-like proportions. So the doors of perception are cleansed. You mean by seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. See everything as infinite. Doesn't mean just like what objectively lies before your objective senses. But who's the seer, right? Hearer, taster, right? So that Atma, the soul, then that means that the Sachit Ananda Vigraha, the infinite, has a form. As it can see, hear, taste, touch, smell, feel, yes, but not in a limited objective sense. Just like in a dream, we see. With what eyes do you see in a dream? Your eyes are closed. I mean, they're by eyelids, right? And what? How do you see? How do you talk? And your eyes are closed. All your senses are supposed to be suspended, and you're doing all these things in a dream. So that means the Rishikesh, the personification, the ultimate expression of what is sight beauty, sound beauty, form beauty, taste beauty, smell beauty, is Krishna. Right? What we're hardwired to seek. Right? Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadira Govinda. And he, all what the senses are seeking, that sweetness, that charm, beauty, he's that. And he gives that. And what's beautiful? Rishikesha, Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. And not just as a consolation, you can serve Krishna with your senses. That's actually what they're meant for. Not just like, I'm going to exercise the seva option. It looks like there's a good payoff at the end. No, it's... So, Rod, I thought, Sukadeva Goswami in the second canto, when he, just for the sake of the context of this argument, he could sound like a fanatical brahmachari. You know, when he's saying like, and if you don't use your eyes to see the form of the deity, they're like peacock plumes and your legs are like tree trunk, you know, and your tongue's like a snake's tongue and, no, ears are like snakes, right? And that tongue is like a frog croaking, like you hear when it rains. Soon it will rain. And there will be this, the tumultuous cacophony, like a symphony of frogs croaking, a cacophony. It's amazing. Loud, like the whole, they'll just be going on all night. So he says all these things, and it's like, wow, that's really harsh. You know, it'd be one thing to say like, and besides all the other things you do, if you would use, that's not how, he's not talking like that. He's saying, your eyes are as useless as the eyes on a peacock plume if you don't see the divine form of Krishna. And he's saying, so, well, he's a devotee saying that, but it's like people who are snobs in various ways, they could be, you know, into a particular kind of music or cuisine or whatever it is, and they might say in with real feeling and conviction, passion, they might say like, unless you've tasted this, you've never eaten, you know, or you've eaten garbage your whole life, or if you haven't seen this, you haven't seen anything, you know. There, we have many expressions like that. Betraying a good, like the level of like feeling that they have. But in this case, it's actually true. That's hard for us to accept. The implications of that. But so it's not just. How Krishna is so beautiful, like, what are you? You have eyes that are meant, you have the capacity to see, and you want to see anything and everything but Krishna? And you remain unsatisfied, wondering why. But we say, well, but I heard that Radharani and the Brajagopis, they can never be satisfied by any amount of seeing Krishna. Yes, that... What you're experiencing is the perverted reflection of that. Right? They can't be satisfied by any amount. And you can't be satisfied by any amount of seeing things other than Krishna. You should come to that. Theirs is quite different. That means they're always left in a hankering position to see more, to taste more, to feel more. Because he's infinite. Right. So I thought, I love Sukadeva Goswami, but just for, you know, we have to think of these things, what opposition might say. That's why we think about different things. And I thought, well, and at times, in a light way, I thought like, oh, someone could perceive him as like a fanatical brahmachari, you know, from like ISKCON in the 70s kind of thing, you know, which is, like, you know, a good thing, actually. We wouldn't be here with, if not for that. And Prabhupada said, if you, you know, if my disciples are a little heavy, harsh, something, he said very beautifully and sweetly, he said, what they have is so valuable, they're trying to protect that. So you forgive them. But so then I thought like that, yeah, someone could say that. It's so heavy. Oh, the ears, one of them is a busted conch shell. I forget the sequence. The snake might have been, no, the frog is the tongue. Snake was the ears because they can't hear, right? Anyway, there's different things mentioned like that. So, and Sukadeva goes through the whole list. And then, so you could think in retrospect, well, that's the second canto of the Bhagavatam, and it's laying the foundation for other things, you know, what's going to come. Seeing, hearing, the beauty of Krishna, really, in the 10th canto. So he's laying the groundwork, some of this, you know, like when you make a foundation, it's not always pretty, right? Got to dig up the earth, you know, and what's the pile driving and, you know, that kind of thing. What's the thing? Rod, ends in rod. Those things that stick out of the cement. Rebar, right. So, but he's laying the foundation work for this, and then the superstructure will hold the beauty, charm, sweetness, love, and affection of Krishna conception, his pastimes with Radharani and Braja Gopis. But then comes the Chaitanya Charitamritam. And Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, as we were telling the other day, he, Swarup Damodar and Raghunath Das, not Swarup Damodar, but after Swarup Damodar leaves the world, then Raghunath Das comes to Govardhan, the Radha Kunda, to leave the world, but then finds Rupa and Sanatan and hope in them, sees, oh, Mahaprabhu and Swarup Damodar are here in them, I have reason to continue living. And transfers the full wealth of the notes, sutra-like notes of Swarup Damodar and his own expanded notes. And that is, you know, full wealth transferred to Kaviraj Goswami. And that's why we have Chaitanya Charitamritam. But that Kaviraj Goswami, fearing he's in his 90s, arthritic, legally blind, could leave the world at any time, he's thinking, he now has the approval of Madan Mohan Deity, the Hari, what's his name? Hari, the Pujari, Hari Das Pandit, and Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, Lokanath, they've all approved. Yes, Prabhu, you present these pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's fearing that he might not be able to finish at all. So in the Madhya Leela, after concludes Adi Leela quickly, because Adi Leela is expanded and Chaitanya Bhagavat. Then when he comes to Madhya Leela, Mahaprabhu's taken sannyas. Perhaps it's Madhya 3, 2, 3. He gives what will be fleshed out in the Antya Leela. He's saying, but this is what you won't find anywhere else, and this is what I need to tell you right now, and I hope I get the opportunity to expand all of this and tell you many things later, but here it is. And it's around 70 verses, and Gurudev used to sing them at various times, just by heart, go through the whole chapter. But there, Radharani, she's speaking about her feelings. That's where she quotes Jagannath Balabha Natak is given. She's not quoting, but it's from there, of Ramananda saying that, and that hankering position that, when I was with Krishna, I was so overwhelmed by his beauty and the ecstasy I was experiencing. Then he vanished. It was so brief. That's what I think, the separate union, so brief. And she's thinking, I have a strategy. If the opportunity presents itself again to have the darshan of Krishna, saying, then I will delay that. What I will do is I will worship time with, you know, an arati and jewels, and I will propitiate time. And when time is propitiated, then I'll turn my attention to Krishna. This is an expression from her heart and her divine madness. But, and no prema gondasti drapi me horo, is there. If I had a drop of love for Krishna, I would have died long ago. I don't have a scent of the fragrance of Krishna prema. What to speak of a drop of that divine substance? Many things are Krishna prema, jambu nadahem. It's like the mythical rivers of gold in heaven. It's not a thing of this world. Many, many wonderful things are there. But then Radharani starts saying, one sense, she seems to be lamenting her own position. You know, my friends tell me she wants, she's waiting for Krishna to appear. And my friends say, be patient, and she's saying, but who has that kind of patience? And she's saying, and Krishna, he's only interested in the beautiful young women, will be waiting, that's all, this beauty that's only for such a short time. Beauty is but a flower, wrinkles will devour, brightness falls from the air, queens have died, both young and fair. So he's saying, so who can live so long? Like sometimes the devotees think like that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Hankering, lamentation, and Krishna consciousness draws remuneration. Genuine lamentation, hankering from the heart is substantial. So, but then she starts saying what her feelings are about someone who does not appreciate these things. And almost verbatim, she's quoting Sukadev Goswami. And just in case you missed it, in his purport, Saraswati Thakur quotes the entire section from the second canto of Sukadev Goswami. And then you see, this is not the position of some fanatical brahmachari Hare Krishna, right? In a stereotypical sense. Srimati Radharani, this is how she feels. What use are those eyes? What? She goes through all the different senses and saying, if not for Krishna, what, like, are you mad? You know, have you lost your senses? Apparently, yes. So it's very beautiful how all of this, the Chinmoy threads connecting all these things and drawing toward this particular conclusion. So then, just to conclude, what do the devotees think then? They think, Prabodhananda Saraswati. How deep, how heart devouring are these sentiments expressed by Srimati Radharani? How conquering are they? You know, victorious in that sense. Yasya kadapi vachanam kailanota danyati danya pavanena kritartamani yogindram durga gati marushudanopi tasya namostu vrishabhanu vubodhi shepi. Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says that that Krishna, why not use Krishna as an example? You know, how does he feel about her? We hear what she feels about. How does he feel? What does he say? Yasya vachananta kailanota danyati danyapavaneti. When Radharani is moving in the plane of service, if some breeze from her skirt comes upon Krishna, the breeze, he considers that he's achieved the most valuable treasure. And then what did he say? Yogindram durga magatima, that Madhusudan, Right? Who's what? Yogendra means the king of the Yogendra Durgama. The very rarely do they have a glimpse of what, you know, his Paramatma feature. Right? What to speak of Krishna from a distance? Right? Yogendram Durgama Gati Madhusudanopi Tasya Namostu Vrishabhanu Vibodhisepi. So what is Prabodhananda's conclusion? If Krishna is saying, the breeze from her skirt, I think I've got the most valuable treasure. Right? That Krishna, Madhusudana, who's very rarely glimpsed by the kings of the yogis, she's so great, then what is my position? Tasya namostu brishabhanu bubodhishepi. Then I worship the direction in which she appeared. That would be close enough for me, appropriate. The direction, the very direction in which she appeared is worshipable to me. And he's Vrishabhanu, he doesn't even mention her name directly. That's why they don't do that. While all these fools are running around mindlessly saying her name, you don't see that ever from these devotees. Except in the case, Raghunath Das Goswami on his hands and knees in Radha Kunda at over 80 years of age, with tears streaming down his face, praying for Radha Dasyam, taking her name. Asha Vareya Mrita Sindhu Mayukatanchit Kalo Mayati Gamita Kila Sampratami Tum Chait Kripa Mayas May Vidasa Srinaiva Kimme Prane Rajena Chaburu Bakarinapi. How delicately they're dealing with this subject, but all the while maintaining this heart's aspiration for Radha Dasyam. Now we've ended in a good place. Hare Krishna.